Welcome to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week and supporting public media. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, this week, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis gave an elaborate defense of the state's troubled system for accessing unemployment benefits. In recent days, the governor suggested that people seeking unemployment around Florida had themselves to blame if they hadn't received any help. On Tuesday, the governor told reporters the state has made payments totaling $2.6 billion. That's paid out to nearly 1 million Florida residents, Tom, who've been thrown out of work in the COVID pandemic.
And we continue to get indications about just how many Floridians have been thrown out of work. Here on this Friday, as we're live across the state, the U.S. Department of Labor says that Florida's unemployment rate in April skyrocketed up to 12.9%. Melissa, this is higher than what it was during the worst of the Great Recession more than a decade ago. Now, the governor said the number of people receiving help has steadily increased in the last few weeks as his administration works to retool the state's overwhelmed unemployment system. He's called it a jalopy. State data shows 95% of people who are eligible for unemployment benefits have gotten checks. But about 500,000 others who applied for unemployment since the pandemic began have been ruled ineligible for those benefits.
That's right, Tom. And that got us to wondering just what makes someone eligible for unemployment. And what would make someone ineligible? We want to hear from you, Florida. Are you out of work? Have you had trouble accessing unemployment? Or have you received unemployment? Whatever your situation, give us a call. It's 305-995-1800. Tweets to at Florida Roundup. Stephanie Quinyu of Spectrum News 13 in Orlando has been reporting on this and joins us. Hey, Stephanie.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you. So as Tom said, according to the numbers, about 1.5 million unemployment claims have been filed in Florida. About a million of those people have been paid, but that leaves out another 500,000 people. Why are those people, according to what you've been able to find out, declared ineligible?
And that really, Melissa, is the billion-dollar question, so to speak. A lot of these people have no idea, and they have been trying to get that answer. We have been trying to get that answer. Governor DeSantis, as you mentioned, did say that this is a system that's imperfect, that was never meant to handle this amount of unemployment benefit claims. He did imply that some of these individuals may have filled out their applications incorrectly. That could be the case for some, and if you feel like you need to resubmit, you can do that. Anyone who was denied or applied before April 5th should actually reapply. Something else that you can do is also call and seek help and advice. But again, that really is the question that we are continuing to work to answer, because Governor DeSantis himself doesn't truly seem to know.
Now, your colleague at Spectrum News, Greg Angel, asked people to submit their names and their background if they were still waiting on unemployment claims. You forwarded those names to the governor's office because the governor suggested to your organization that you hadn't properly vetted all of these people who are claiming they can't access unemployment. Is that right? What are you hearing from the Floridians out there who are giving you their information and their information about their case?
Well, right now, I'm taking a look at the list right now. We have 6,642 Floridians from all across the state who have submitted their information to us. They became unemployed because of the coronavirus. They have filed for their unemployment benefits claims, and they haven't received the full amount of benefits. And really, the status of their claims range from pending to active to approved. Some have received some money. Many others, they have indicated zero. They have received absolutely no funding from the state. And what they're telling us, really, I call it the three F's. They're fear. They really don't know what their future holds. They're frustrated because a lot of these individuals, most of them, have tried so many times to get through. And then there's the fatigue. There's the fatigue of trying to just get what they need to survive. And we did. We submitted this list. My colleague, Greg Angel, submitted this list to Governor DeSantis. He asked us, the governor said, have you vetted these individuals? We have not. We did ask people to send us their information, but we don't have access to their Social Security information. That's not something that we have access
right.
to. So we cannot fully vet. The DEO can. We cannot. We just received that information.
And forwarded it. And we are getting information in the form of calls anyway from listeners around the state here on the Florida Roundup. Give us a call wherever you are. Let us know your situation as we talk about the unemployment mess in the state. 305-995-1800. Paul in Miami Beach. Hi, Paul.
Yes, how you doing today, guys?
Good,
Thank
how are you?
Thank you for having me. I'm doing wonderful.
So what's your situation?
Let me tell you what's been going on. I actually was laid off with 97 people at my firm literally on March 21st. On March 22nd, I went to register for unemployment, had the most difficult time even registering, got into the system finally like 3 weeks later, computer-wise, was able to put in my information. 3 weeks later, I get an email from DEO saying that I need to check my account, telling me that my application is not ineligible this time because I have not completed all the necessary information, which I completed, employers, gross revenue, everything. The system wiped out all the information. I had to do it 3 times before it took.
And now are you still waiting, Paul? You're still waiting?
Yes, ma'am. On March 22nd, I started calling them. Literally, I was able to get through yesterday, 2 months later, okay,
mm-hmm.
where they told me that to give them 48 hours again and that I should be okay. Well, it's 48 hours and I'm not okay.
Yeah, still on hold in a way, yeah. Well, Paul, I'm sorry to hear that. And I appreciate you calling. Stephanie Quinyu, how common is a story like that?
You know, it's so sad. Paul, I'm so sorry to hear that you're stuck in the system. Unfortunately, and we've been receiving hundreds, if not thousands, of similar stories. You are not alone, Paul. And this is the frustration, again, the fatigue, because you've been doing your part. You've been working so hard. And unfortunately, the system is inundated. It's overwhelmed. And they are working to try and remedy that, but certainly not quickly enough.
Jay Gankarski is going to join our conversation. He writes for Florida Politics. AG, welcome back to the program. Nice to have you.
Hope
you and your family are well. You reported that Senate Democrats early this week delivered to the governor's office information of more than 1,000 applicants who've been waiting for unemployment benefits since March. Has there been a response about that list given to the governor?
If there's been a response, it has been released publicly, and that's par for the course with communication between Democrats and the legislature and Governor DeSantis. There's been an endemic lack of communication from the executive branch about what's been going on with the unemployment system, the fixes being made, et cetera. Representatives like Orlando's Anna Escamani basically go 24/7. Filling out, helping people with their applications and listening to the governor's solutions on unemployment, which are non-answers and the cycle repeats. So there's a lot of frustration, but there's not a lot of leverage from Democrats. So they've been tub-thumping, politicizing the issue, trying to bring awareness to it. And that's where it stands with that.
The governor, meantime, has both criticized the system that he says he inherited. He's called it a jalopy, trying to run the Daytona 500 with a jalopy. That's the analogy he's used. But he's also defended the fixes that have been put in place over the last several weeks. And one of the metrics that he continues to point to, saying that almost 98% of valid individual claims have been paid. Now, doesn't that make sense, though, that valid claims have been paid? I mean, shouldn't that be 100%?
Yeah, you would think so, but the devil's in the details, because the governor has, you know, at a number of appearances said that, you know, many people who are unemployed are responsible for filling out the application. They've missed things. They've left out things like their last name or their Social Security number or other things, which, you know, it kind of defies belief given you know, the fact that people have been applying for 2 months here. But the governor says a lot of this is user error, and he's gotten pinged for this both in the state and national media.
We're going to take more of your phone calls, 305-995-1800. Your experiences with the unemployment system in Florida. A.G. Gankarski is with us with Florida Politics. Stephanie Quinyu is also with us, a reporter for Spectrum News 13 based in Orlando. And your phone calls at 305-995-1800. Let's go to, looks like, Dennis in Jacksonville. Hi, Dennis. Thanks for calling in. You're on the radio.
Hey, how you doing? I'm afraid that my story is a little bit of more of the same. I've tried for the last couple months to apply, and if they can't use the excuse of it being user error because I've gotten really darn good at it. But the latest thing that they've done is send me an email saying we're granting you a temporary PIN. Use that with your social, and you can start the process again, but it doesn't even let me do that because it says invalid PIN when I use their temporary PIN. So actually what I'm worried about is I'm not worried about me and my family that much because we have a garden and we're pretty self-sustained the way we handle things, but I'm just worried about the boiling point that's happening in this city. You know, sooner or later there's going to be desperate things happening where people will do what they can to feed their family. And Governor DeSantis has done very little to, ease my concerns of this. So anyway, thank you so much.
Dennis, I appreciate you giving us that perspective from Jacksonville. Stephanie Quinyu, you've got 6,000 different names on your list. And I imagine many of those stories are echoing somewhat similar to what Dennis in Jacksonville is experiencing.
Yeah, absolutely. People feel like they are banging their head against a wall, and this wall is the DEO website, and they are just trying to break it down. And unfortunately, it's radio silence. So many people have been trying to call. They've been trying to use the website and simply have come up against what it seems to be this insurpassable barrier. And that really is just the frustration that we have been hearing from people. They are really working hard to do everything that they can on their end, and they're being told it's not good enough. And that really is the frustration that we're hearing echoed across the state of Florida.
We are getting calls, meanwhile, from across the state of Florida, so people can express that frustration and just share their experience here on the Florida Roundup this Friday as we talk with Stephanie Quinyu of Spectrum News 13 in Orlando, A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics, and it's 305-995-1800. Let us know your situation as you try to access unemployment around the state. 1.5 million people have tried to get it, but only about 1 million have been paid. Dave is in Fort Myers. Hi, Dave. Thanks for calling.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure. So what's your situation?
Situation is pretty resembling of everyone else's. I applied back when it first started. I'm an independent contractor. I wouldn't have applied for unemployment until they had lifted the restrictions. So I expected issues from the onset, but unfortunately, multiple efforts to file for both the state and the federal. I got an email back finally after 2.5 months. Saying that I was ineligible because there was some information that needed to be corrected. Unfortunately, when I went back to the site following their email from DOE, it took me to nothing. There was nothing that I could adjust. There was no guidance there. There were no messages. Mm-hmm. I read the email 3 or 4 times, went back through it, finally contacted them yesterday afternoon, and I spoke to a woman that I do believe her intentions were well. But I think she was working from home, and she explained to me, I really can't access the complete system the way it's set up. But you've been deemed ineligible, so you won't be able to get anything like that, but you should get the other monies from the federal. And I'm thinking, well, how does this work when nothing is connected? There doesn't seem to be anything. There's no continuity from the beginning to the end, and that leaves all of us sitting here going backwards.
Right, and I'm so sorry, Dave. I'm sorry you're in that boat. AG, there are a lot of guys like Dave out there. And what about that? If you can't access Florida unemployment, that impacts your ability to receive the federal unemployment benefits that are available, too.
Exactly. I mean, the pandemic unemployment assistance benefits is what he's talking about. And those are available for independent contractors, for small business owners and so forth who are economically displaced through this. But, you know, the system had so many problems. It didn't have server space that it needed. It couldn't make the connection to the federal Social Security database. These are the issues that the governor says that he's been trying to fix and working to fix. But the anecdotal evidence is that the fixes are still too incremental. And as the governor works to reopen the economy, you know, he basically said in Jacksonville that, you know, he's expecting for payments to come through to people as they get back online going to work. But a lot of these businesses, even going into the pandemic, were undercapitalized. So a lot of businesses that went under aren't coming back. So, I mean, the governor's making a big bet on a sharp economic recovery combined with the site fixes coming into play. And as we hear from caller after caller, and I get hundreds of emails from people saying the same things that Stephanie has said. Yeah. Basically, people are desperate. They're sending out Social Security numbers to me.
AG, the governor, really, they're sending you their
yes.
Social Security. Oh, my goodness gracious. That is not a practice.
I do not recommend that.
No. Not at all. I'd rather tell you my weight than my Social Security number. AG, I'd also like you to comment about the money involved here, because when the governor and his administration do defend the actions that they've taken to try to clear the backlog here, talking about, you know, 95-98% of eligible valid applicants have been approved, he also talks about paying $2.7 billion. Well, you really have to look into those numbers, I think, because most of that is coming through the federal programs, the booster of $600 or the independent contractor piece that you just spoke about. Based on the number of people that have been paid state unemployment benefits, the average is less than $1,000 that people are collecting right now.
Right. I mean, and you have to look at state benefits. What's actually allotted from the state level is $275 a week tops for 12 weeks, but many people are not getting what they expect to get. I found somebody who got a debit card with $0 on it today. You know, I don't know what they're supposed to do with that. People are getting like under, they're determined at getting paid $125 a week or something like that. So, you know, the money is dribbling out, basically, you know, from the state side. I mean, there's the Healthy Trust Fund, but that trust fund's being depleted. And, you know, it remains to be seen if they're going to get the system online to actually fulfill these claims timely.
Stephanie, I'm curious what folks are telling you of your list of 6,000 people waiting for answers in terms of the amount of money they expect and the amount of money that they could be in line for if they are eligible.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've been taking a look at this list, you know, as we've been talking, and I have to say the majority of this list, they have received $0 since they not only first became unemployed, but filed their unemployment claim. We've been seeing amounts for $1,200, you know, $247, but the vast majority, I have to say, are $0. I did want to circle back to Dave, though. He mentioned that he had called, and I wanted to let anyone know who's listening out there, if you have made a mistake on your claim or you need to edit your claim, you have to call. And I just want to put out that number. I don't know if this is the number that Dave used.
Real quick, we're coming up to a break, Stephanie. Go ahead.
Yeah, 1-833-FL-APPLY. So that is the number that you need to call. Just to put it out there, hopefully that could help some folks.
Good to get
that
out there.
Stick with us. Yeah, Stephanie Quinn, you with Spectrum News 13, A.G. Gankarski with Florida Politics. They're going to stick around after the break. More of your phone calls, wrestling with unemployment in Florida, 305-995-1800, 305-995-1800.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. As we continue, Tom, to talk about unemployment issues around the state, I want to read this tweet really quickly from Leah. She says, "It took 2 full months for me to get my first unemployment payment. The website is purposefully hard to navigate on its best days and impossible in busy circumstances because of constant crashes." It's Florida Roundup to tweet us your story. And Tom, this is the common refrain that we keep hearing from folks out there.
Indeed it is. Stephanie Quinyu is a reporter with Spectrum News 13 in Orlando. A.G. Gankarski, reporter for Florida Politics, still with us, 305-995-1800. In fact, Melissa, Rick in Panama City has a similar story to share with us. Rick, thanks for listening and calling in. You're on the radio.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I applied probably about 2 weeks after I got employed back in 322, and it took that long for me to actually be able to get through. And I have not received a dime. I've been approved. They have all my stuff, my information. I actually went online today and tried to apply, tried to email somebody. The email actually froze up, like, as soon as I went to percent. So I'm like, okay. I called the number, the 204 number, and what happens on that one now is you get to the very end, and it says, call this number. Well, the number they tell you to call is the 204 number that you're on right now. So, and I listened to it like three times. I'm like, am I doing this right? I mean, I had sat and went through the whole system three times. I'm like, okay, well, maybe the 411 service has, you know, the state 411 service has a different number that I can call because everybody's calling and I can't get through. So I called the 411 service and the lady's real nice. She's like, no, we don't have another number. We have that 204 number. I told her the story. She goes, well, they told us that if anybody calls and has a problem, we're going to take their information and we'll send it over to them and they'll call you whenever they can. I'm like, what? And she goes, yeah. I'm like, you're the 411 lady. She goes, yeah. I'm like, okay, well, here's my information. She didn't take my social security number, but she took all my information, and now I'm waiting in limbo.
And now you're still waiting 6 weeks after applying, and they did give you the green light. You have been told you've been approved. You're eligible.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I think it's $1,300 what they think that's the beginning, but I don't know. I have no idea. Some people say it's $600, some people $200. I really don't. So that's 322. I've been approved since, and I haven't got the first dime from the state.
Gotcha. Rick, thanks for sharing. I appreciate you sharing that experience. Rick from Panama City. Stephanie Quinyu. Go ahead, Rick. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. One more idea. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, it's Panama City Beach where I'm from, but, you know, it would just be the lady before that. It's really bad, you know, and I'm okay. I mean, I'm okay. I'm getting where I'm getting scared now, but I can make it.
Rick,
but
I appreciate you sharing that. Thanks for your story there. Stephanie Quinyu, what's striking about what Rick shared and what we heard from the tweet earlier are folks are learning that they're eligible and then yet still waiting days and days and weeks for these payments.
And here's my question, Stephanie, too. Why shouldn't everyone who's been paying taxes into the system be eligible?
You know, that is a good question, Melissa. And the way that this system works when it comes to eligibility is that you have to fit a number of criteria. And if you don't fit the criteria, that you could actually be deemed ineligible. You had to have lost your job through no fault of your own. You have to be able to work and actively seek work. Up until now, you couldn't have been self-employed or freelance.
But the governor did waive that. But Stephanie, the governor did waive that criteria to have to actively look for work. But the problem was that question was still on the application for a good long time.
Yes. And that is why if you have been denied or if you applied before April 5th, you need to reapply again. Because if you were deemed ineligible, you could be eligible now. And so I think that that's really where the frustration and the confusion are, because this continues to evolve. And what applied in the very beginning of this pandemic no longer necessarily applies right now. And people really just don't know where they stand. They want to know where they stand. So, again, what Rick was saying is he was trying to call that 1-800 number. That is one option, the 1-800-204-2418. And the other way, and unfortunately, again, this is through the website. This is through your Connect. If you've already submitted your application and you're trying to figure out where you stand, you do need to go onto the website and log on to your Connect, and hopefully that will tell you if you're in the process or what the case may be. But again, even if you're deemed eligible, that doesn't guarantee that you'll be getting that financial assistance that you need in a timely manner. And that really is where that frustration is coming into play.
We're getting tweets from listeners saying they're going on the Connect page right now and seeing that it is experiencing technical errors. Meanwhile, lots of calls coming into the Florida Roundup. Bruce in Miami is with us. Hey, Bruce. Happy Friday to you. Go ahead.
Hey, same to you. Hey, listen, I've been listening to your listeners, and My problem is 180 degree from their problem. My wife got laid off, and we tried to apply for unemployment. It took us a good time. Of course, the system is slow. But we eventually got through, got the application. And then maybe a few weeks later, we got our first payment and then a second payment. But then she was recalled to her job.
Mm.
So we said, well, let's go on and cancel it because, you know, we don't need any more unemployment payments. So we went online and we couldn't figure out how to do it. We have called maybe about 12 or 13 different times. No one picks up the phone. We eventually got through to one lady, and she wasn't sure how to discontinue the payments either. So, and since we tried to discontinue, we've got two additional payments, which what we have been doing is putting it to an account that we hardly use, just to put that money aside, because we don't want to be hit with any penalties or anything like that. But for the life of us, we can't figure out how to cut off these payments.
You want to cut them off? Okay. Yeah. Hey, you're in the minority, Bruce.
She was recalled to her job, so and we're trying to figure out how to, but nobody seems to be able.
You can't get through.
But when we go to the website, there's no option. And
kudos to you, Bruce, for being so honest and not taking the payments once you've started working again. But I take your larger point, which is that you can't get anyone to kind of communicate with you about this. Thanks for that call, Bruce. I want to just put this to AG. AG, that is there are all kinds of stories out there. Everybody's got a unique situation, and that's one of them. But he's actually receiving checks and is having trouble communicating with the office. You know, we've heard so much about the problems with the website and the call center. The governor has taken a lot of heat for this, as you said. And
right.
He's blamed his predecessor in the beginning anyway. He blamed former Governor Rick Scott for all of this. But, 6 weeks on or however far we are into this, at what point does the state have to have have to really own this? That at this point in the game, the issues I think all the voters out there certainly feel should be fixed.
Yeah, I mean the governor, to his credit, is saying that it's his responsibility to fix the problem, the jalopy site that he inherited. There's going to be an inspector general investigation when the dust settles on the site, the governor said. So basically, once the crisis is over, the inspector general is going to dig into it. But I don't know what penalties are possible, even for the people who developed. I mean, the Rick Scott administration is gone. Deloitte, the contractor, they're untouchable because they're politically connected. So you may not see anything feeling like justice coming out of the investigation. But this is the governor's baby. He owns it, and he's carrying it into 2022 if he doesn't fix it.
Follow-up, yeah, does he pay the political price for that or not?
I think we'll see, what happens to Republicans in the state in the November election. Does this help Joe Biden, with swing voters in Florida? I think that's the real leading indicator of the political consequences this crisis has. I mean, the governor wants to be president, just like Rick Scott and Marco Rubio. But if he's seen as a guy who botched unemployment, he's not going to make it out of the first primary.
Well, before we get to 2022, we do have the 2020 election in the Florida House up for election, which has been controlled by Republicans for the better part of a generation. Is there any legislative answer to addressing the shortcomings and the vulnerabilities that have been laid bare because of the pandemic when it comes to the unemployment system in Florida? Is there any legislative appetite to tackle that in 21?
Well, Democrats wanted a special session to do it this summer, but they couldn't get any support. A lot of Democrats sat up supporting it, and Republicans, of course, didn't want to do it. So if it happens, it's going to be during the regular session, which will be, next year. And, that's not going to be early enough for the people we're hearing from today.
Yeah. Let's squeeze in some more phone calls here, folks. 305-995-1800. We will go to Apollo Beach and Marty on line 11. Marty, you're on the radio. Go ahead. Marley, you with us?
Oh, good morning.
Let me hit the button there. There we go. Go ahead. Now you're on the radio.
Okay. Hi. My name is Marty.
Hey, Marty.
My problem is I was a full-time Uber driver. I'm 79 years old, and being a prime target, I stopped driving. So I read where the unemployed, the Uber drivers were eligible for Florida unemployment insurance. First question is that true? Because I put the application in.
Stephanie Quinn, you, how about Marty as an independent contractor for the state unemployment insurance? What's your best understanding?
My best understanding is yes. I mean, I think that there are definitely nuances, but my understanding is you are eligible. The specifics, I'll admit, Marty, I do not know about, but it does seem to me that you should be eligible. I did also want to circle back with Bruce, because here's the thing, and this is good advice for anybody out there. Bruce was mentioning that he was trying to actually pay back or, you know, stop the payments. Email. Paper trails when you're dealing with circumstances like this are so essential, because if you're not getting through on phone calls, they can say that they never connected with you. So what you need to do is email. And also on the FloridaJobs.org website is email a reemployment assistant agent. So if you have an issue, I would also encourage not only trying to, you know, make those phone calls and log online, but email, because then you do have that paper trail and you can say, look, you can see on these dates, this is what I attempted to do. And that could help you potentially down the line.
Let me bring back Marty here, because I know you had some other questions, Marty. Yeah, we know that the state, for an independent contractor, we know the state eased those restrictions that had been in place. And then there's also federal dollars that one can qualify for as well as an independent contractor.
My first question, which I hope one of you experts can help me with, is, does anybody know that an Uber driver or Lyft driver has collected unemployment insurance in Florida? That's my first question.
Stephanie or AG, have you run across any?
I haven't run across the Uber driver per se. I mean, the system's intended to protect people with payroll jobs.
Right. And, but I will say, we did hear earlier from a self-described independent contractor. It didn't say whether or not he drove for Uber or Lyft, or maybe it was just an independent contractor. He could have been an accountant for that matter.
Right.
But regardless, Marty, if it's Uber or Lyft or a construction worker, a 1099 independent contractor is an independent contractor. It shouldn't matter who the contract is with.
In order to get, there's another program, a federal program, which an independent contractor, Uber, sent it to us, telling us that we're eligible for that also. It's with PayPal. And in order to get approved on that, you have to be ineligible with your state. Well, it's a catch-22. I mean, if I'm eligible or I'm not eligible, you're saying I am, and I don't know if it's just the paperwork, but it's a morass. And I will say this, that the Republicans got a real problem if 1,500,000 unemployed people are still allowed to vote. But go ahead.
Marty, we're going to leave it there, but we appreciate you calling in from Apollo Beach, and best of luck, and keep us updated in the weeks ahead with your situation. A.G. Kankarski with Florida Politics, great to have you back on the program, A.G. Nice to hear from you.
Thanks, sir.
And Stephanie Quinn, you with Spectrum 13 News in Orlando. Stephanie, thanks for sharing your reporting with us as well.
Thank you for allowing me to be with you.
And this is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
Well, this week, the firing of a Department of Health employee who worked on the state's online COVID-19 data dashboard sparked new questions over just what information there is public and what's not. Rebecca Jones says she was removed from managing the online dashboard in early May. She claims it was because she was asked to, in her words, manipulate the COVID data. But she hasn't explained that accusation further. Meanwhile, Governor DeSantis is defending the state's public data, and he countered claims Jones was the architect of that state COVID-19 online dashboard.
She is not involved in collating any data. She does not have the expertise to do that. She is not an epidemiologist. She is not the chief architect of our web portal. That is another false statement. And what she was doing was she was putting data on the portal, which the scientists didn't believe was valid data.
With more on this, let's welcome Alessandro Marazzi Sassoon. He's a reporter at Florida Today, USA Today, and he broke the initial story on this. Alessandro, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, we have two claims here, one from Rebecca Jones, one from the governor. Let's begin with Jones. What data does she claim she was ordered to manipulate?
So this is, I think, the outstanding question in many ways. What we learned after this initial story broke was that there were internal emails showing that she was given a directive to revoke access to certain data. The implications of that and the importance of that data and why she was asked to do that are still unclear. And until we know that, I think the question about the data's integrity that Jones raises in her email saying that she was removed from her position that was sent out last Friday is still a cause for concern.
What about the governor's claim that Jones is not credible, that there were other issues with her employment?
Well, I think that's quite interesting. You know, clearly Jones appears to be a complicated character. And what is still unknown is if these claims about Jones being repeatedly insubordinate are true, then show us the personnel file, show us the emails, show us the evidence. The governor has opted to attack the credibility of Jones directly and sidestep these questions about, okay, well, what about the concerns about the underlying data? The concern with the data comes from the researchers who are processing it, who are using it, who need access to what was fed into the dashboard had access to what was fed into the dashboard, and then suddenly that access became inconsistent or changed.
It changed how? Meaning under-reporting of cases?
I would hesitate to make any conclusions about what changes were made because, again, that is the unknown here.
We don't know the answer to that. Okay. Well, as we continue talking with you about this, it's 305-995-1800 and tweets to at Florida Roundup as we speak with Alessandro Marazzi Sassoon. He reports for Florida Today and USA Today. What are your questions about the public data into COVID-19 cases in the state of Florida? What are your thoughts about how the state is responding to this pandemic? We're going to take a quick break, but then continue the conversation. So give us a call and let us know your thoughts. It's 305-995-1800. Tweets to at Florida Roundup. We'll be right back.
On Florida Public Radio, I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, new data on Florida residents who have died from COVID-19 was released this week after some delays from the state. The information includes how and why people died, and it covers more than 2,000 COVID cases in Florida. Governor Ron DeSantis continued defending his response to this outbreak, and he criticized the news media for reporting on early projections that showed a potential sharp spike in infections would overwhelm the state's hospitals. Those projections did not materialize.
So we've succeeded, and I think that people just don't want to recognize it because it challenges their narrative, it challenges their assumption, so they got to try to find a boogeyman. Maybe it's that there are black helicopters circling the Department of Health. If you believe that, I got a bridge in Brooklyn I'd like to sell you.
Well, helicopters or New York real estate aside, this week a nationwide look at COVID-19 data found big differences between state testing data and testing numbers from the Centers for Disease Control. Now, Florida is home to the most extreme discrepancies according to this study. The COVID tracking project comes from the Atlantic magazine, and it finds the federal data shows 33% more testing than the state publicly available data. But the CDC figures include diagnostic tests and antibody tests lumped together. The federal data also includes all tests, even if someone has tested more than once. So what is the data showing us here as Florida continues reopening? 305-995-1800, 305-995-1800, or on Twitter at Florida Roundup. Jay Wolfson is with us now, Senior Associate Dean for Health Policy and Practices at the University of South Florida. Dean, welcome to the Florida Roundup with us via Skype. What is the testing data that should be used to make decisions around reopening plans?
need to be consistent for one thing, and we know now that there are different tests that are used. There's a swab test up your nose, down your throat. There are some blood tests that are being used. Not all the swab tests are the same. There are questions about false negatives and false positives. There are questions about whether or not it's the diagnostic test for having the disease right now or whether you've already had it and it's in your bloodstream. And as you noted, the CDC data appear to include lumping together of both of those things, which really doesn't help us understand the dynamics of the disease. And we need to do that. We have to have fairly granular, textured data all the way down to a community level, knowing who has had it, mm-hmm. who has it today, and we get more testing done, valid testing done, by the way, so that when there is a hot spot, when we open up our economy and our communities more and more, our schools, our businesses, our sports platforms, that if there is a hot spot that we see, we can immediately go to that place and begin to control it before it becomes a forest fire. Right now, we don't have a lot of that stuff.
You mentioned valid testing. There have been reports about some of the antibody tests are coming back with a pretty high failure rate, for instance. Let me circle back around to the story around data that has really garnered a lot of attention inside Florida as well as outside Florida. And that's, of course, the story this week on the firing of a woman who worked on the state's COVID data dashboard. She claims she was fired for what she said was efforts to manipulate the data. That aside, how confident are you in the dashboard information that's publicly available?
Well, we've all been using the dashboard as a basis for understanding the dynamics of the illness in our community. Those of us in universities and in healthcare institutions are looking at it. But we also know that there are questions about the quality of the data that go into that dashboard, because there are no consistencies and standards that are used across the state, within the counties, within institutions, with respect to the coding of specific things, specific diagnoses, specific causes of death, and then the recording of it, and then the reporting of it. So it comes from a bunch of different places with a bunch of different standards, and then it goes into the health department where it is then recoded in. And because there has not been a great deal of transparency with the data sources, and there are several that are used, it's difficult for those on the outside and for those of us who are attempting to use those data to know that they're valid.
Alessandro Mizrazi Sassoon is the reporter with Florida Today, USA Today, that originally reported on the firing of this individual. Alessandro, let me bring you back into this conversation, because there can be a lot of noise around this personnel matter, and rightfully so, some big questions that still need to be answered and asked. But underlying this is the validity of the data and the transparency of the data. Is the issue around Ms. Jones and her termination really kind of taking the spotlight off of questions and valid questions that Dr. Wolfson and other researchers are having regarding the Florida information?
Well, moving the spotlight certainly seems to be what the governor may be attempting. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'll let the politicos make the commentary of the strategy there. The truth of the matter is that the researchers who are working with the data, researchers at, you know, research universities in the state, continue to report that they're concerned about the ability to validate the data upon itself. The concept of, for instance, when an entry is made, being able to track it over time requires its digital identity to remain consistent. And then questions about, you know, what criteria the DOH uses to measure different things. These are questions that the researchers are asking that sometimes yield no clear answers. They're questions that I've asked as well, specifically questions about, okay, well, what is your criteria for you know, a COVID death, right? We have this residency count. What does that mean? The non-resident count. Okay. I think it's telling that this week we did actually, after a month of it being suppressed, get the medical examiner data. The medical examiner count is, by all, from what I understand, is entirely independent from the DOH count. It's collected by the medical examiners across the state who are statutorily tasked with considering a body in the location where it is.
You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Dr. Wolfson, as you've been saying, trusting in the integrity of this data is critical for physicians and anyone who is concerned about public health, because the state does continue its reopening. We haven't been overwhelmed, as the governor and others have said, and that's been good news. But as we continue to track this virus, epidemiologists have warned over and over that we could see a resurgence, particularly in late summer or fall. How concerned are you about that? And given that potential, how important is it that we be able to trust in the data we're getting?
Melissa, it's more important now than ever, and we've been learning every day as we go about this disease, something new about it and how it affects individuals and population groups. We have no vaccine, we have no treatment, and we've not established herd immunity. Some politicians blame the Chinese for causing this, but just this last week, the Chinese identified just a handful of cases in the northeastern provinces, realizing that it was a new firestorm of the disease, and they closed the entire province off. That's because they had enough testing data and surveillance data at the community and local level to be able to find a case when it erupted. We need to be able to do the same thing because, as you suggested, come late summer, early fall, we have every good reason to believe that there's going to be a likely resurgence of this virus, very likely a mutation of this virus. We'll be entering the flu season, and we'll be at the near the end of the hurricane season. We'll be juggling a lot of public health community stuff. It's just literally a perfect storm in all kinds of ways, and we're smart enough to have learned from this. And the consistency, the quality, and the validity of these data, especially the testing data, the incidence and the prevalence data, are the most important things we can have so that we can respond appropriately and not place a burden on our healthcare system. We've been so fortunate.
Let me ask you about a couple of other metrics that are used in the state and federal government's reopening guidelines: emergency room visits with flu-like and COVID-like symptoms. These have been trending down on a weekly basis, according to the State Department of Health data that is publicly available. Now, on Thursday, we heard from Dr. Randy Katz. He's director of emergency medical services in Broward County, about how they're seeing already fewer people reporting flu-like symptoms.
Usually around this time of year, we do see a drop, you know, through the summer, but we've seen it really drop down almost to zero. And I think a lot of that is because people have been staying away from the hospital for minor complaints, you know, from the emergency room. You know, if they have cold-like symptoms or flu-like symptoms, they may go to a testing center, but they're staying away from the emergency department if they're fairly well.
So, Dr. Wolfson, is this data useful for these reopening decisions that are being made in real time by local, state, and national officials?
Yeah, I think those data are important. We have, in fact, seen a reduction in the rate of increase, not only in the COVID new cases, but in flu and flu-like symptoms. But there's another reason that people are not going to the hospital, especially minority communities and high-risk minority communities, because, one, they don't want to get tested. They're afraid it might be positive in those communities. They don't trust the government. They're not going to a hospital, even if they are very sick sometimes, because they are concerned about never coming out and never seeing their family members again. But that aside, we're seeing a real reduction. And as we've noted, the social distancing, the personal health behaviors over the past couple of months have led to a natural environment where we're not going to be communicating with each other and communicating and communing with each other and spreading the disease, any disease. And at the end of the summer, we do tend to see a significant reduction in the rate of flu-like symptoms.
Well, that's why one, we have to be one little tiny piece of good news that we can end the show on. I want to thank you both so much for joining us. Such important information we've been getting out to the whole state this Friday. So thank you, Dr. Jay Wolfson, Senior Associate Dean for Health Policy and Practice at the University of South Florida, and Alessandro Marazzi Sassoon, reporter with Florida Today and USA Today, joining us as well. Guys, thanks so much for being on the Florida Roundup. We appreciate it.
Be safe and be well, folks.
Thank you very much.
And thanks to everyone who called and tweeted the show. Sorry we couldn't get to each individual call and tweet. We appreciate you sharing your experiences with us here on the show. This is the Florida Roundup, produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Heather Schatz and Chris Remington are the producers.
Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming, the Director of Radio Operations at WLRN, and our Technical Director this hour is Peter Meritz. We get engineering help from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Josh Torres. Thanks, fellas. Richard Ives answered the phones. Our theme music is provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos. More at aaronlibos.com. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Have a safe and happy Memorial Day weekend. We'll be back next Friday at noon.